This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
This week on Colombia Calling, with me, your host, Richard McCall, we're talking to expert Paula Delgado Kling all about child soldiers in Colombia. So if you want to listen to an incredibly delicate subject which has repercussions for the ongoing peace dialogues between the government and the FARC at the moment, listen into this show. We're talking to an author who is writing has been writing a book for many years about child soldiers in Colombia. That's Paula Delgado Kling. Here, I'll be talking to her from Bogota. She is in New York. This is a great show, a great interview to learn more about the peace process in Colombia and what the repercussions may be in the international human rights courts. So, listen and tune in to Colombia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. Get started today at podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
And it's that time of the week again, folks. It's Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota. And we're going to be plunging right in this week. There's no time to talk about all the comings and goings in Colombia at the moment because we've got a very special guest this week. In the shape of Paula Delgado Kling, and she's a Colombian expert here in she's in New York. We're talking to her in New York, and we're talking to her primarily about the situation and the conflict in Colombia, and we'll be moving on in later segments of the show and talking about her book, which is in the works. It's being pitched out there at the moment to publishers about child soldiers in Colombia. And of course, someone with this kind of background on Colombia, being Colombian, but raised formative years in Canada, and now living in New York, you know, has a different perspective. She's able to step away from the situation in Colombia and study and analyze what's going on. So we're going to be talking to Paula right now in her blog. It's talkingaboutcolombia.com. It's this for all the real news about Colombia, for all of the stuff that doesn't get into the mainstream media. You need to look at that page. So, Paula, welcome here on Columbia Calling.
Hi, Richard.
Now, listen. You're very welcome. Listen, we're gonna plunge right in because I know that one of the great big themes that you want to talk about is kind of like reconciliation and redemption. You know, what's going on? How are we going to move forward in Colombia?
Reconciliation and of respecting the rights of victims will come from the International Criminal Court.
Uh-huh.
The Colombian media has talked about this, but I don't believe it's aired enough. And it should be something that Colombians are aware of.
Uh-huh.
Is that a prosecutor at the International Criminal Court, Fatou Bensouda, has expressed about Colombia that the crimes that matter to the international community, those that violate international humanitarian law, including the recruitment of child soldiers, are something that should not be left unpunished.
Mm-hmm.
It's particularly important that Fatou Bensouda is saying this because she was responsible for prosecuting a warlord from Congo. His name is Thomas Lubanga.
Mm-hmm.
And he was found guilty by the International Criminal Court of using children as young as 9 as bodyguards, sex slaves, and fighters.
And these are issues and themes that are going to be concurrent in your book.
Yes, yes.
And now, so with the ongoing peace dialogues that we're going to talk all about this in later segments, but in the ongoing peace dialogues that are taking place between the FARC guerrillas and the Colombian government in Havana, Cuba, you know, are they just going to brush these crimes under the carpet, do you think?
It's so difficult to tell, Richard, because we are not told a lot about what is discussed at the table.
Uh-huh.
And I think that gives way to a lot of maybe gossip.
Yes.
About this, they're talking about this, they're talking about that, this is outrageous.
Uh-huh.
But something that is a fact, and to keep in mind, is that according to the Inter-American Court on Human Rights,
uh-huh,
there are 218 members of the FARC convicted in absentia for crimes against humanity. 8 of them are members of the FARC secretariat.
So these are the guys in Havana.
Gossip.
Yeah.
This is not gossip that they may be talking about this, they may not. This is a fact.
Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, so 8 of them are the secretariat. Huh.
Yes, 8 of them members of the FARC secretariat.
And so we can assume that that's a grand majority, you know, a large number of those people are in Havana.
I would assume so.
And they're guilty of crimes against humanity, so that's massacres. It's trying to wipe out people. It's atrocious crimes.
And mass graves.
Mass graves, wiping out towns, wiping out ethnic groups, you know, trying to erase people off the face of the earth. And this will include recruiting child soldiers, no doubt.
It does. And, you know, Richard, I don't understand how President Santos, who is somebody aware of international opinion about Colombia, who is known for his reputation on Wall Street, of stability, of foreign investment,
mm-hmm,
of rebuilding Colombia into a modern era, to be in the likes of India and of all the countries, even above an emerging economy, I believe, how this can be reconciled in his mind.
Yeah.
That the international community has given a message that if the law in Colombia does not hold somebody accountable, there is the International Criminal Court, which in due time will not let impunities go.
Absolutely.
So in his mind, as somebody aware, somebody who comes to speak at the Council of Foreign Relations to international investors why they should invest in Colombia, how does this happen?
Mm-hmm.
How does it happen that he is granting political quotas to human rights violators? So he's granting political quotas to people who have been convicted in absentia of crimes against humanity. He's going against everything he comes to talk about on Wall Street.
It's a very interesting situation. You've put this in a really, I mean, a really, it's almost tangible for the listeners out there.
Would you invest in Colombia if you knew that Colombia's next mayors, senators, and congressmen have recruited children, have repeatedly raped women, have wiped out towns?
Yes.
Would you put your money there?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, I already have, but yeah, you're making an incredibly valid point, and one of with we're going to grapple in later segments of this show. We're talking to Paula Delgado Kling, and we'll be talking all about the recruitment of child soldiers, her future book, and thoughts about Colombia and the peace process taking place at the moment. Obviously, as we are in the, you know, we basically entered presidential season, because the elections will be next year, and Santos has announced his candidature again to run for president. So don't go away. I'm talking to Paula Delgado Kling of Colombia, talking about Colombia.com. I'm Richard McCall. This is Colombia Calling.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Okay, you're not stupid. You see the handwriting on the wall. You're thinking about joining the millions of Americans who have already left the country. But where do you go? You don't want to make the mistake of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You need accurate info to make one of the most important decisions of your life. You need EscapeTheUSAnow.com. You don't want to have regrets because your expat country collapsed due to crime, conflict, disease, famine, natural disaster, scarcity, war, or a government gone bad. Only at EscapeTheUSAnow.com will you discover the handful of countries that offer true freedoms and unbelievable opportunities that most people could only dream of. EscapeTheUSAnow.com is the information you cannot afford not to have. Information that took over 30 years to research, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, with more than a quarter of a million miles traveled. For less than $2.50 per month, you can have what may be the most life-saving information you have ever obtained. EscapeTheUSAnow.com, so you don't jump from the frying pan into the fire.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.justlanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's justlanded.com.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house? Find a job? Find a doctor? Start a business? Invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at colombia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota, and I'm tuned in to New York at the moment. I'm here with Paula Delgado Kling, an expert, a Colombian, an expert on the Colombian situation. And we're going to be talking about very emotionally charged issues going on in Colombia at the moment. But first, I'll introduce Paula. And Paula, welcome on the show.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. How's the weather there today in New York?
It's chilly.
Well, we've got a beautiful Bogota day today. It's high altitude, clear skies, blue. I can see the mountains from my studio. But anyway, well, rather than make you envious that you're not here and I am, so we're talking about you, and you've got a blog. You've got a blog called TalkingAboutColombia.com. Now, you are originally Colombian, but you grew up and you had your formative years in Toronto, Canada. So, I mean, you talk a little bit. The listeners out there are going to know that you've lived overseas, but you feel Colombian. You're living in New York, and you have this blog that's really addressing some of the very, you know, important and sort of, let's say, hardcore topics going on in Colombian politics. What was your motivation for talking about Colombia?
The blog began as a way for me to understand Colombia, to come to terms with what was happening there. And I found that the more I read, the more I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Growing up in Toronto, it seemed unbelievable to me that these sorts of things were happening in my home country.
Yeah, I can understand that. But, I mean, you address almost everything there. I mean, you're talking about the paramilitaries, you're talking about the guerrilla, you talk about the kidnapping, you talk about a topic that we're going to be focusing on principally in this show later on, is the child soldiers. But, of course, I mean, you know, who's reading your blog?
I have people from Russia, from Eastern Europe, Western Europe, from London, many Canadians.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, there are few Colombians. Maybe it's the Colombian diaspora. But I have also gotten emails from Australia, from people who just say, oh, thank you for explaining it to me in basic terms. What is happening there? Thank you for trying to figure out for me what it is that's happening in Colombia.
And why would you? I mean, you put this blog up there, and I think it's because in the mainstream media there's a dearth of information about what's really going on here. I mean, this is something I grapple with all the time. You know, as a journalist myself, continually attempting to pitch. I've been a freelancer for going on, I don't know, 15 years or 16 years, but I'm continually trying to pitch things that are of importance to me, but then are not seen in the slightest bit newsworthy in the mainstream press. So when we get blogs like yours, we have to say thank you.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the reasons I wanted to write the blog and keep up on Colombia is because I was also pitching to a lot of magazines.
Uh-huh.
But it is hard to pitch the kinds of stories that you say are on my blog, which are not something you want to read over coffee in the morning. It's more the reader who is intrigued to know, okay, what is going on with human rights violations?
Yeah.
What is the situation of the free trade agreement, and how is that affecting people? Why are the indigenous losing their culture? Should drugs be legalized?
Yeah.
All those kinds of things are hard to get in the media, and one of the other reasons I wanted the blog was because I was doing a story on a displaced woman. And it was for one of the women's magazines.
Uh-huh.
I think they do a great service that they do publish the kinds of stories about the world and about women in different parts of the world. However, the story was about how this woman was threatened, how her children were threatened. And one of the editors called me and asked me for a photo of the woman.
Yeah.
And I was outraged. It seemed to me, wait a minute, did you not read the story you assigned to me? We cannot publish a photo of this woman.
Yeah, I've had the same issue with a newspaper in the United Kingdom. As I remember, again, for argument's sake, the gentleman's name was Rodrigo, and he had to flee a town. He'd seen something, etc., etc. And they're, oh, we need a photo to illustrate it. I was like, yeah, that's not happening, you know, with the internet.
I almost got to the point where I said,
yeah.
It's okay, pull the story, but we can't. No, I'm not getting you a picture of the woman.
Right. So, all right, but very interesting. Now, so you're there in New York, and you were raised in Toronto, but like you say, you're one of these people who has one foot in Colombia and one foot outside. So it gives you that external perspective on what's going on here. Perhaps that gives you even a greater grasp.
It does, because when I think about things happening in different places, I think about people that I know who come from those places.
Mm-hmm.
People who were important in my childhood.
Yeah.
People who helped raise me. People who drove me to ballet class. People who were there for me when I was a child.
Yeah.
Who were part of my environment.
Yeah.
And they may come from Cauca. They may come from different places that's suffering from the conflict.
Mm-hmm. And obviously you have fond memories of your initial years here in Colombia.
I do. I have especially fond memories of this nanny I had. I absolutely adore her. So I'm a mother now.
Yeah.
And when I look back, I think of how great she was in terms of nurturing me and offering me the love and the support. And it seems amazing to me that this woman who, basically, she's not illiterate.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't spend her free time reading Don Quixote, was able to nurture me in a way that was so important to who I am now.
And obviously, as you know, sort of been a guide to you being a mother and so on.
Absolutely. I even call her now and I ask, I say to her, well, this is happening. What should I do? Don't worry. Just go and get this kind of medicine. Oh, this is a homemade remedy
something. And how often do you get to come back to Colombia, Paola?
I haven't been back in the last few years. I've been busy writing.
Yes.
And I needed a little bit of time away from Colombia without the emotion of new material in order to digest what I've been writing about. I've been writing about child soldiers for 12 years. And I needed a little bit of space, a little bit of calmness.
No, I can understand exactly what you're saying because, I mean, the news never stops here. The new material never ceases. You're always I've been putting together my own thoughts on several things, and I thought I'd finished a chapter the other day, and then something else happened. I'm like, well, that's another couple of thousand words I'm going to have to add in there. You just need to step back on occasion, no?
Yes, you have to, feel it inside you. And if there's so many things being bombarded at you of the horrificness of what happens, there's no time to sit with it and figure out what it is that it's telling you, what it means.
Yes. Now, this book, we're going to discuss this book and the topic of child soldiers in greater detail when we come back in the second, in the next segment of the show. But you've been writing it for 12 years. I mean, this has got to be pretty harrowing. Yourself as a mother, talking about the child soldiers, the recruitment from both sides. So if, for those people who don't know, the paramilitaries are the right-wing reaction a bit to the left-wing guerrillas. Both sides have notoriously used child soldiers. And you've dipped into this world. I mean, not dipped. You've immersed yourself into this world to understand. 12 years is not a short amount of time.
Yes, it's not. I think it took me a very long time to find the voice, to be able to tell it in a very direct way.
Yes.
Because the world of child soldiers is so different from my world. It's so different from the world of my readers.
Yeah.
That I wanted an unfiltered look at child soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to reconstruct what their home life was like, what their parents were like, the domestic abuse that is suffered in a lot of these cases, the cases of homelessness.
I
wanted to bring the reader front and center to the feelings and emotions. And you know, Richard, the other thing is looking, because I've taken a step back and had the time to look at cases in Sierra Leone, in Congo, in other parts of the world, these are the same kinds of scenes and dialogues that are taking place in other parts of the world where there are child soldiers.
Yeah. So you're holding no punches, though. I mean, you are absolutely going to swing heavily at everyone with your text when it comes out, this book.
Well,
it's not going to be light reading, I don't think.
It won't be light reading, but at the end of the day, it's about humanity.
Okay.
It's about how people live, how they survive.
Yeah.
This book will be about understanding and compassion.
Fantastic.
And, you know, it's very timely in the sense of the peace agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're talking about the reintegration of hundreds of thousands of former paramilitaries, former FARC.
Yeah.
And as a society, we have to be able to understand them.
Yes.
To fear them less and less and let them into our society, to have compassion for what it was that happened to people who had no control over their lives, whose lives were stolen from them.
Absolutely. Now we're going to come back and we're going to hit the main topic of this interview in the next segment with Paola Delgado Kling here, a writer based in New York, Colombian descent, and we're talking about child soldiers, a dreadful, terrible situation that is very much in the news at the moment, and of course of great importance to us as a society and to understanding Colombia. So I'm Richard McCall, your host. This is Colombia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. It seems almost silly to ask, but if you're going to be living abroad, why wouldn't you want to learn the language? Do you want to make life more difficult for yourself? If you're going to the time, expense, and risk of living abroad, give yourself the best chance for success by actually being able to communicate with your new neighbors, at least on some level of proficiency. A recent article in Escape from America magazine caught our attention. In it, writer Paul Allen wrote about his experience at a conference in Vienna, attended by folks from all over Europe and the Middle East. Allen was amazed at the level of English skill exhibited by attendees who were using it as their second or even third language. Yes, English is still the language of business, but that sentiment is not going to do you much good when you're trying to buy a bar of soap in Managua. Don't be the ugly American who thinks the rest of the world should bend to your accident of birth. Allen went on to quote a 2005 European Commission study, which reported that the following percent of adults in these countries were able to converse in English. Sweden, 85%, Denmark, 83%, Netherlands, 79%, and Luxembourg, 66%. Add to these amazingly high numbers that over 50% speak English in Finland, Slovenia, Austria, Belgium, and Germany. Kind of makes us look inadequate, huh? A Dutch friend who Allen spoke with told him that she believes that American television had a great influence, since the shows run with Dutch subtitles rather than being dubbed. A last tidbit for you. English is the third most spoken language in the world, after Mandarin Chinese and Spanish. Americans planning on living abroad in a Central American country, take heed. They speak Spanish there. For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and I'm here with Paula Delgado Kling, a Colombian based in New York, raised in Toronto, Canada, and writing a book at the moment about the incredibly important topic of child soldiers, and of course, child soldiers in Colombia. This is a situation that is very real. We're not looking at something out, you know, some distant land. It's we're close to the United States. We're close to the news and the mainstream media, and well, child soldiers is something that's been in the news of late. There's a BBC documentary recently, and Al Jazeera have done a report on it. But Paula has been doing this book for 12 years. So, Paula, tell us a little bit more about the book that you've been working on, and the sort of backgrounds of the two children that you interviewed.
I met in Bogota in a rehabilitation home.
Uh-huh.
I met them in May of 2001. At 13, the boy was abducted from his home. He was trained to make artisan gas cylinder bombs, to plant landmines, and to kill with an AK-47.
Oof.
The girl voluntarily joined of her own free will.
Yeah.
She was 13.
Yeah.
And she joined because she was homeless. She had nowhere else to go, and the FARC came for her family.
Yeah.
At 13, she became the sex slave of a much older commander.
Oof.
She was 13, and he was in his late 40s. For 6 years, the girl was a commander's sex slave.
Aside from the absolutely... I mean, heinous stories that we're embarking upon here. How did this take its toll on you emotionally?
I think part of the reason why it has taken me so long to write this is because I have to think about it and digest it for a while.
Yes.
It's taken its toll more and more now that I'm a mother.
Of course.
I have a 4-year-old, And essentially, this book is about children.
Yeah.
As a mother, I'm constantly looking out for the well-being of my daughter. I'm looking out for her nutrition. I'm looking out for, is she getting enough exercise? Somebody tells me that music expands the mind. Okay, where can we get the piano lessons? And this is about children who didn't have anyone looking out for them, who didn't have adults looking out for them.
Yeah.
And Richard, it's very heartbreaking to me that not even the government is looking out for these children.
Yeah.
It seems to me like the Santos government has no interest in the children.
I think if we hammer the Santos government, since the president has recently announced that he's going to run again, this gentleman in charge, only matter, the only importance that he has, the only importance he places in anything are international agreements with multinational firms. And there doesn't seem to be any agenda for the most, let's say, forgotten generations or forgotten stratas of society in Colombia. And so when you're talking about this, you know, this I mean, it's just absolutely heartbreaking, this tale of the 13-year-old girl homeless. What was the situation that made her homeless?
She suffered through a lot of domestic abuse. There were a lot of disagreements with the mother. There was abuse from the father. The mother refused to accept it. It was not a good home environment for the girl. And I my sources tell me that this is very common in Colombia, that there's a lot of domestic abuse.
This is what I've heard. Obviously, I wouldn't know, but this is what I've heard, is that, you know, when we talk in my course, conflict resolution course here in Bogota, a lot of the experts say, I mean, you know, when the figures, you know, come out about the number of youngsters sort of looking for belonging elsewhere, you know, that's not in the sort of la cuna de la familia, not in the family, the heart of the family, because of domestic abuse, the numbers are going to be just, I mean, sky high. That's something I've heard.
Yes, and for me, as a woman living in New York, it amazes me, the macho society. It amazes me that women uphold the macho society. That women choose to defend the man in the family, the husband, who may be doing abuse to the children, versus watching out for her own children.
Yeah.
This is a cycle that repeats itself over and over.
And now, this isn't restricted only to, let's say, rural communities. It's also in the city too. Have you found this in your investigation?
Yes, and it's so interesting that you asked that, because one of the things I found was campesinos leave their farm in order to avoid recruitment of their children.
Yes.
They move to the peripheries of the cities.
Yes.
Where the milicias are. So rather than being recruited into a rural kind of setting in the FARC, in the jungle, they're recruited into the milicias or the gangs.
Yeah.
Depending on which neighborhood they're on. It could be FARC, it could be the new neo-paramilitary groups, the Bagrim. But areas outside Cartagena, outside Barranquilla, in Ciudad Bolívar, in Bosa, These families, a lot of them single mothers, who do not have the education to survive in the city, do not have the skills, the social skills, to survive in the city. They're in mourning of their husbands.
Yeah.
They have lost their land. Suddenly they become the head of the family. They're thinking about the crops and the house and the memories that they left behind. And they move into these shanty towns, and their children fall prey to the other groups.
Of course, they're incredibly at risk. So, you know, we're talking now about this, a massive internally displaced, I would say community, well, this massive internally displaced collective within Colombia, you know, fleeing so that on one side so that their children don't get recruited in the rural areas, and then they get picked up in the peripheries of cities, Soacha, Ciudad Bolívar, if we're talking about Bogotá, like you're saying, in Cartagena, all of those regions outside on the periphery that no one will see when they come to visit Cartagena, only from the aeroplane, or Barranquilla, when you think of Soledad, you know, Arjona, all of these areas are what you're saying. But it's really interesting that, you know, these people who have only a knowledge of the countryside then come to the city and, of course, have no, you know, they have no skills to offer.
They have no skills. But, Richard, maybe there are ways that people who come to Cartagena do see these children, because a lot of the little girls fall prey to sex tourism. A lot of these scummy people in hotels set up the little girls to the pedophile willing to pay.
Yeah.
So they're not only falling prey to the gangs who want to recruit them, the drug gangs, but falling prey to the society itself for sex tourism. There's something I have a hard time even talking about this, but I don't know if you read in my blog about families, mothers, fathers themselves who auction off their girls' virginities for money.
You mentioned it, and I think it was in the Independent newspaper some time ago as well. They did a piece on the sort of auctioning off in the comunas in Medellin as well to the paramilitaries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's, I mean, it's just, I mean, there's some, I just think that the beggar belief, really, I mean, you think about this, this can't happen in a functioning society where, you know, parents love their children or they're forced into these situations. I just don't understand. But, so, I mean, in the book that you're working on, have you addressed this problem, and not a problem I would want to talk about too much, but this problem of the child prostitution in Cartagena? Have you addressed the situation that some people fall?
Is more from Putumayo area.
Uh-huh, so down in the south.
Down in the south, but it's still, it's a problem across Colombia.
Yes.
It's a problem of respect for women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, I just read this about the Andrés Carne de Res guy.
Oh, yeah, Andrés Jaramillo.
Well, she was wearing a miniskirt, and we're talking about somebody who is an established entrepreneur, and he's saying, well, she wore a miniskirt.
Yeah.
So this is not a question of Putumayo. It's not a question of the slums outside Cartagena. It is even present in Andrés Carne de Res.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we talked about this last week, in fact, with my last interview about Andrés Jaramillo, who it's gone all awry on social media because Colombians are incredibly adept at this this new technique. But and it even got picked up by the BBC and what have you. But Andrés Jaramillo, who owns one of the biggest restaurants, but most famous restaurants in Colombia, I would say, actually, you know, there's a supposed, and I can't say, but a supposed rape in the car park. And of course his interview, he said, well, the girls were, you know, arrived in jeans and then left in a miniskirt. She was obviously looking for something. And, you know, if anything, the stupidity. But again, he wouldn't see it as stupidity. You know, he wouldn't see it. It's a Colombian, you know, not all Colombian men are like this, but this is the establishment. And if we take something from this, at least it's opening up the debate. We've got to take something from this so it doesn't happen again, you know. So there's I don't know. It's such an unpleasant situation. This, but so moving back to your child soldiers. Now, so the girl was in Putumayo, and the young boy was from which area?
He was his mother had a farm in San Vicente del Caguán.
So right in the heart.
Right there, he was born into the area.
Yeah.
What could he do?
Yeah. Now, San Vicente del Caguán, for those who don't know, it was is an area down in Caquetá, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a massive area bigger than Switzerland, given over during the Pastrana administration as a sort of demilitarized zone for the FARC, so that there could be peace talks between the FARC and the Colombian government in the early 2000s. This ended in 2002. The only person who didn't turn up to the peace talks, interestingly enough, out of all the politicians invited to go there, was Álvaro Uribe, who then became the president. So everyone else went and tried to negotiate, but it was a bit of a farce, really, these peace talks. The FARC were very much in the driving seat at that time in the country. They were winning. That's why Mono Jojoy, the military, military director of the FARC, his parting statement was, we'll see you in the city. You know, I mean, that's arrogance. That's someone who knows that they're winning, you know. So anyway, talking about
Richard, I just want to kind of lead into how similar it is to what's happening now.
Yes, please.
What's happening with the current peace talks taking place in Havana?
Yes.
For my blog, I wrote about how President Santos addressed the United Nations. And he was asking for special permission for Colombia to not be held accountable to the International Criminal Court. When addressing the international community at the UN last September, President Santos said, and I quote, "The right of Colombia and all nations to seek peace must be respected. We ask that you continue to accompany us, but respecting our decisions and our way to make peace." Now, as somebody who grew up in Canada, what he's saying is, I don't care about human rights violations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about victims. There is no justice in this country.
We're going to mull about this one. We're going to come back right away to this topic, because it's incredibly important. We're talking to Paula Delgado Kling in New York. She's the author of the blog talkingaboutcolombia.com. That's Colombia, C-O-L-O, to all of you out there who are spelling it like British Columbia. Anyway, so we'll be coming right back after this short break, and we'll be continuing this highly emotionally charged interview.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control healthcare, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Searching for freedom? The sustainable community in Chile is found at FreedomOrchard.com. Quiet, peaceful, and pristine are some of Freedom Orchard's outstanding features. Freedom Orchard offers recreational activities, organic farming, and self-sufficiency for water and electricity. Well-known Chile expert, free market economist, and radio host of Red Hot Chile, Dr. John Coben, is heading a team of developers, organic farmers, and seasoned professionals to make Freedom Orchard a reality. FreedomOrchard.com, for when you're serious about your freedom.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. I'm Rich McCall here in Bogota, talking to Paula Delgado Kling, a Colombian in New York, who's writing a book about child soldiers, which is being pitched to the market at the moment and hopefully will be out soon. But we've been addressing the peace dialogues that's taking place in Havana. And yes, we mentioned, Paula just mentioned, President Santos, Colombian president, said, his speech to the United Nations, saying, you know, basically, respect our decisions. So, I mean, if we read between the lines, it's more or less like, we'll achieve peace in any way by not respecting any human rights. Paula, can you continue?
One of the main FARC negotiators, Ivan Marquez,
uh-huh.
And I quote, he said, "And what about an international criminal court, interventionist and biased, which knows little about the internal Colombian conflict?" Now, Now, as someone looking at it, at both quotes at the same time, and putting it in the context of the victims and the horrific events of, say, the little girl in my book, who for 6 years was a sex slave to an older FARC commander, these people do not care about victims.
Mm-hmm.
And Colombia's only redemption, Colombia's only hope, will be its children. And this is the only way that they're treating their children. The FARC and the government have complete disregard for the rights of children and for human rights violations.
When you look at statistics, and you know, the World Bank at the moment has a statistic for Colombia that 30% of the sort of working population is effectively, you know, young. This is an incredibly youthful country, and yet there are no rights for children.
There are no rights for children, and yes, there is the reintegration, the rehabilitation program, which promises to quickly rehabilitate victims, which within 7 years. It cost the government $21,000 per victim to rehabilitate somebody. But in reality, my sources tell me it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It has become such a institutionalized, systematic way of going about somebody's emotions and feelings and therapy.
Yeah.
That most of the time, the therapist comes in and just wants a piece of paper signed, so he can go back and collect.
Yeah. But what you know, when we talk about these are, you know, the psychological treatment that a former child combatant, you know, seized from their family or joining due to extenuating circumstances, joining an illegal group. What sort of process is it? Are you, for example, your two contacts, what did they go through?
Therapy is always in the background.
Of course.
They started off in the Ministry of Family Welfare because uh-huh. they were 17 when they first joined the program. I met them 6 months after they had been in the FARC. They're moved from home to home depending on how their therapy is advancing.
Yeah.
Whether at some point they need more focus on schooling or more focus on the arts.
Yeah.
To give them a chance to express themselves.
Yeah. And
or to get them away from a situation where they're not advancing, where they're too depressed, so it breaks the cycle, so you move them to another home.
And how long is this process? How long does it all take?
I believe that for an average ex-combatant, it takes 7 years.
7 years. It's a generation.
To go through the program. So that's 7 years of somebody's life to try to get over it.
Yeah.
And Richard, only 25% of those who go through the program return to a life in a criminal group.
Yeah. Yeah. And but do you have any figures to hand? And I'm sorry if I drop this on you. Do you have any figures to hand? How many sort of children are in the rank and file of the FARC or of the any other the illegal groups out there? Do you have any idea?
It's so hard to tell.
Mm.
But in the last 10 or 12 years, I believe, 1,000 children have gone through the program of the Ministry of Family Welfare.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, as the FARC talk peace in Havana, the recruitment of child soldiers for the FARC has gone up.
What do we equate this?
I believe it's the same thing as happened in El Gawan. The facade of peace.
Uh-huh.
But no real motivation behind
yeah.
it.
Uh-huh.
But also certain fronts have expressed a desire to become their own group.
Yeah. Well, certainly.
To break off and take on the drug ties and the drug alliances that are becoming a vacuum once the top commanders demobilize.
So, we say that we've got the secretariat, so that's the sort of ruling, let's say 12 or so, or six or so, who are there in Havana talking away, securing their comfortable futures, but there will be fronts, as they're called, frentes of the FARC down in the south, Nariño, Cauca, certainly the Teofilo Forero column, which is the sort of Hollywood-esque, they're the ones who do the most daring, most sort of almost movie-like, raids and kidnappings and what have you. These guys aren't going to demobilize, they'll become what we now call backrooms, neo-paramilitaries almost, because they'll be running their own groups. They'll be running, you know, the drug routes and the strategic corridors in the country. And what can we hope for the future? I mean, if there's no economic, incentive to demobilize, and there's no, there's no hope.
Well, we have to have hope.
Yes.
Because ultimately, these are human beings. This is humanity. These are somebody's children.
Yes.
These are people who become mothers, who become fathers. We have to have hope.
Yeah. Well, if you think about, a few years ago, a FARC a guerrilla, a female, a woman guerrilla called Karina demobilized. And she was, and she's kind of the sort of the image of nightmares. You see a photo of her and so on and so forth. And she joined age 13 or 14. She's now in her 40s. But she kind of, let's say, became aware of the situation when she became a mother and she saw her daughter rising through the rank and file and becoming a bit like her. So is this something that we can pin hope to as well? This sort of humanity?
Yeah. I hope so. On my blog, I wrote about Simone Trinidad's Compañera Sentimental.
Uh-huh.
And she spoke about her daughter and how difficult it was to give up her daughter in order to continue being the revolucionaria.
Yeah.
And you know, Richard, interesting enough, also in Vera Grave's memoir, uh-huh. Vera Grave is a demobilized M19. She was one of the M19's only two women commanders, top commanders.
Yeah.
She was offered an amnesty in 1991, I believe it was. And in her book, she talks about the dilemma, the choices between continuing in the group and being a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And how the pressure from the group for her to continue with the group, to put it above everything else. She talks about the group being her family,
yeah,
and taking chances for her family, meaning the group.
Yeah. It's a tough one, that. I mean, you know, and also I think what a lot of what we see in the sort of mainstream press here in Colombia, of course, are when we talk about the group and the family, and then of course linking into your contact from the Putumayo, from the southern jungle regions of Colombia, in your book. They're forced abortions if they're pregnancies and so on and so forth, because you know nothing can exist that's greater than the group.
Oh yes, but even because of the circumstances of how hard everyday life is,
mm-hmm,
it's sometimes not a question of a forced abortion.
Yeah,
it's sometimes a question of numerous miscarriages,
sure,
one after another, due to the malnutrition, to the endless walking, to the stress of the war helicopters flying overhead,
mm-hmm,
the news that's happening. I mean, when I was pregnant, I devoted my entire being to eating well, to exercising.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine being pregnant in a war situation.
And, you know, yes, and humping it out in the jungle, miles and miles and miles on a daily basis, and, you know, not knowing where the next meal's coming from as well. I mean, it's...
Or the next hot meal.
Yeah, this is true.
Because you can't light a fire, yeah.
So
you've been carrying your whole house on your back.
Yeah, this is true.
And a baby in the front.
So, as we wind down this interview, I have to say it's been incredibly insightful. Let's plug your future book a little bit here, and so tell us a little bit more, and hopefully we'll see it on the shelves at some point soon.
Oh, Richard, that's so generous of you. Yes, so hopefully my book will be out soon. As I said, it's about my friendship with two child soldiers from the FARC. The boy, as I said, was trained to make artisan gas cylinder bombs, to plant landmines, to kill with an AK-47. The girl joined very young, at 13, 12, 13. She's even unsure when exactly she joined, because she's not sure how old she actually is, which is very common. When I first met her, she said she had been in the group for 6 months. But as therapy advanced, no, she was okay saying, you know, I actually was in the group for 6 years. She had had a lot of brainwashing from the commander who abused her, had trained her what to say, what not to say. There were a lot of things that she did not want to talk about because she didn't want to face. You know, we talk about hope, and the hope is that she's now friends with her mother. She's a mother herself, and she understands her mother's hardships. She understands her mother's stress at feeding 12 children. She understands her mother's stress at seeing them not clothed properly, not having food for them. Through the therapy, she's been able to come to terms with it. And I think if we look back at that, there is a message of hope for Colombia. There is a message of redemption that because we're all humans, and we all feel the same pain, we might be okay. It's a question of understanding one another and of fearing one less and less, and of extending the hand forward to somebody and accepting them.
Incredibly, yeah.
I'm not saying accept human rights violators. Accept people who were victims.
Yeah.
Because victims in Colombia, we're talking about the people who are trying to rebuild their lives as former combatants. We're talking about the displaced. We're talking about the gangs outside the main cities. I mean, Colombia has a wide range of victims, and I just wish that it didn't take the international community to step in and interfere on behalf of victims, but that it would come from a place of the government, of compassion from the government, of putting victims before abusers.
Very, very poignant. What the points that you're making. So, Paula, I'd like to take this moment just to say thank you very much for being on the show. It's been really, really informative. Check out Paula's website, talkingaboutcolombia.com, and obviously keep an eye out for Paula Delgado Kling on the shelves of your local bookstore, because that book's coming out sometime soon. And when it's out and when it's successful and reviewed and everything like that, we'll have you back on the show. And so thank you very much again, and I hope those of you out there have enjoyed this show. I've been talking to Paula Delgado Kling. I'm Richard McCall. This is Colombia Calling, and be sure to tune in next week. Thank you.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.